Over the years on the podcast, Nate and I have looked at all the topics available to us, topics that are important to school owners, topics that are important to us as school owners, and said, yeah, we definitely should cover that topic. And usually it's a big, broad topic. It's a topic that is of obvious value to everyone. Retention, how to get more students, stuff like that. And there's a lot of angles that we can take on each of those topics. For any one of those topics I just mentioned, we probably already have a half dozen episodes in the can that look at those from different angles. Every once in a while, though, Nate and I are talking about something that is so specific that it really feels more like a conversation between he and I. And recently we had such a conversation, and about 3 minutes into the conversation, I said, wait, stop, hold on. We should just have this conversation on the podcast. We did one like that recently, a couple episodes back, or a few episodes back now. And then we did that when we did the live recordings from Brooklyn Music Factory earlier this year. But I think this episode's going to be that again. And it's an opportunity to look into a deeper conversation, a conversation that touches on a lot of different things that are important to school owners. Marketing, how you program in your studio, the effects of that on retention. Like there's a ton of things wrapped up in here, but I think deeply on the strategic angle of marketing and down to messaging and how you present your programs to the world. So Nate, I'm really glad to be having this conversation with you. And part of the reason why I was so interested in having this is because I think we have a bit of a differing opinion. So are you ready to get into it? Are you ready to disagree on the podcast?
Yeah, no. We come up with the richest conversations and the richest ideas when we actually go at a topic like inventory or marketing or sales systems, and then just see how the two of us have had different experiences. So I'm totally down. Let's get into it.
Yeah. And, I say that tongue in cheek. It isn't necessarily a disagreement. It's actually the benefit of being in conversation with other people. I mean, it's really kind of the backbone of some of the programs we've even run with other school owners, where we get a bunch of school owners together. And the strength of such a group is that the multiplicity of opinions and perspectives really can strengthen every other member there, which is, something that we're working on even now as we go deeper into 2024, kind of a secret project we're working on, which we'll announce later this year. But having said that, Nate, I think the best way to start this would be how you actually started it with me. You just mentioned this offhand. So maybe lay the groundwork here and explain to everyone the decision that you were facing that led to this conversation.
Yeah, totally. Well, we were, it's funny because we started with a programming conversation where we're like, hey, how do you set inventory for your next season or semester? And so what we're doing at Brooklyn Music Factory is I'm going through what I call the sandbox and creating the entire inventory for the fall. And in so doing, we're putting a real focus on our group classes and our ages 4 to 8. And then as you and I were sort of talking about that process, we talked about how to market for it. And I mentioned that I had worked with an SEO expert who'd done a really awesome job for BMF in many, many ways. But their recommendation to me was, hey, actually, let's not speak specifically to group classes or specifically to that age range. Instead, let's help them just search what any parent would search for, a private piano lesson. And then once they come in, you describe the benefits and value of joining your mini keys class or your jam band, rather than try to direct them straight to a mini keys landing page, that kind of thing. And so I brought this up as I'm strategizing, how many group class spots are we going to be selling for the fall? And you mentioned, Daniel, you were like, well, actually, Nate, I would concur. That's exactly the strategy I would do, which is don't redirect parents to a group class until you get them into the sales funnel, until they're sort of like one stage down. So anywho, that's to tee it up. And I think that the conversation we're going to have today is going to cover both this idea of programming your future classes and inventory. How many spots are you going to be selling and by when? And in what particular category, group class, private lesson, that kind of thing. But then also, I think we might get into a nice little back and forth on strategies on how you'd actually go through the marketing and sales of that. So that's where we are, Daniel.
Yeah. So maybe to start out, a good thing would be maybe give me your thinking on the advice you received and where you felt you disagreed and where you agreed. I know you referenced it before, but maybe go a little bit deeper on your thinking around that.
Yeah. So I consider, you know, I consider the marketing funnel to be many stages, right? So without getting into the weeds, at the very top of our funnel is an awareness campaign that we're putting out there. And who are we trying to make aware about what we do? Well, parents. And in our case in Brooklyn, they're going to be parents between the ages of, I'd say, 34 and 64 specifically. And so the awareness campaign to me is really all about understanding your specific purpose, what makes your school unique. In the case of Brooklyn Music Factory, it's a songwriting program where we're developing all the tools necessary for them to be strong songwriters in a collaborative sense. So by the time they, you know, reach 7 to 10 years into their journey at BMF, they're very capable at communicating with other musicians, writing and recording a record. So they might be sort of 12 or 13 by that age. Anywho, so in my mind, Daniel, you really want your website and your all of the sort of messaging you're sending out, social, web, that public-facing thing, to be very clear in what your purpose is and also what your method is, right? Like how you're doing this and then what the benefits are to those families that enroll their students at Brooklyn Music Factory. And so the strategy was, hey, if we're going to dig into sending people to specific pages, which is basically what we're doing in SEO in a nutshell, is trying to direct searches to an awareness campaign, i.e. a landing page. I was like, hold on, why don't we make them very aware about songwriting and all its benefits and the features in a Minikeys songwriting group class, right? So that was the strategy. That's where I'd like to start, is that's the way I was thinking at the time.
Interesting. Okay. So I hear that and immediately my marketing consultant hat goes on. And I think this discussion can be valuable to folks because I think it's helpful to hear, and as I said earlier, into different perspectives. On one hand, we want to be clear about what it is that people are getting into. We want to be clear about what the product is. We want to be honest about what they can expect. That's a concern. I have to balance that concern with what I know about human psychology. Human psychology, and especially how that relates to marketing, would suggest that when helping someone to overcome the inertia to put down their hard-earned money and sign up for something new, to bring something new into their life, we have to be careful that we're not overwhelming people with too much information at the beginning. In other words, the mistake that most school owners make when marketing their programs is that they just give all of this information to families without the context of how that child's going to feel in that program and how that parent is going to feel with their child enrolled in that program. In other words, for the parent to make the best decision possible, they would already need to feel emotionally what it is to actually take that program. If we could give people that feeling in advance, then our conversion rates would be sky high, but we can't. So what we have to do is give them as much of the emotional feeling that they're going to get, the feeling of pride they'll get seeing their child play in that band or write their 18th song, or depending on, you know, the studio's focus, their first recital. I know BMF doesn't do recitals, but I'm, you know, applying this to everyone who's listening here. If we could bottle that feeling up and give it to the family, they would sign up in a heartbeat.
So we have to be really careful about the information that we give on the front end, because if we give them too much information, they get overwhelmed, they shut down, and they go away.
We don't know what each parent's trigger point is going to be. We don't know what's going to work for every single parent. But marketing psychology would suggest that there is something that works for the majority of people in terms of their psychology and how they think. Young, old, mom, dad, across cultural, across cultures, across ethnicities, there are some things that are so deeply ingrained in us as humans that it'll work on basically everyone. So there's a light side and a dark side to this. Let's start with the dark side. The dark side is that anything that we know would be a turnoff to people, we don't want to put in our marketing. Now, on the surface, that seems really obvious. Well, it is kind of obvious. And I want to put a pin in that and say that there's something in particular that this particular situation you're dealing with now, there's something on the dark side. The light side is that the kinds of things that work for everyone often have to do with focusing on the result that your product gets and not the individual elements or the individual features that your product has. In other words, if we know that the majority of parents are at the very least neutral about group lessons or a group lesson, and at its worst, and this is fairly common, have an assumption that it is somehow substandard or not as good as a one-on-one lesson, then putting that at the top of the funnel could potentially depress response rates because people don't have that understanding. They don't have that context that I was talking about 5 minutes ago. They don't have that experience of the product already. And so in absence of having that experience of the product, they will just say no to the product and never experience what the product, your lesson program, they'll never experience that. And therefore, they turn their back on something simply because they were operating off an assumption that they had about the quality or the form in which they received it. Let me say this in a different way. Do parents really care if it's a private lesson or not? Do they really care? Well, they seem to,
right,
when we say, oh yeah, the way we're going to educate your child is actually in a group lesson. They seem to care, well, no, I want a private lesson. And if you ask them, okay, well, what do you expect? How do you expect that private lesson to work? Well, they'll come to lessons every single week for, the next couple years. And, at the end of a couple years, they'll probably be through the beginner book. And they'll be ready to go into intermediate music, and they'll probably be able to even write some music on their own. They'll probably be able to play with other kids. But yeah, that's going to take a couple of years. So you want the private lesson. Right. Okay. What if you bring in the child for 1 hour next week, and we have this amazing hypnosis technique, and we're going to hypnotize them, and actually at the end of that 1 hour, they're actually going to be able to play with as if they've been practicing for 5 years. Are you interested in that? Oh my word, yes, I'm very interested in that. So what we've just proven there is that they actually don't care about the format. They don't care about private lessons. Because as soon as you showed them an alternative way of doing it that seemed better than the way that they had imagined in their mind, they were all for it. The problem here is not group lessons versus private. The problem is that the parent doesn't know what they're talking about. The problem is that they have an assumption about what group lessons means, and they have an assumption about what private lessons means. And we can avoid all of that if we only talk about the result that the kids will get in the marketing. Because if we only talk about the result, the format is actually neutral. If we only talk about the result and we talk about what the average student can do, that's actually the best marketing because it avoids all of the stuff that could potentially be a roadblock in the parent's mind.
This episode is sponsored by grouplessons.com. If you're looking for a group piano method that is easy to implement in your studio or school, look no farther than Piano Express from grouplessons.com. Because unlike most group piano methods, Piano Express allows students to make individual progress within the context of a larger group. And because of the at-home practice tools and gamified curriculum, students using the Piano Express method make faster progress than the average method book student. And that helps students feel excited, accomplished, and motivated to learn new music. Also, the system is really adaptable. We've got teachers using the system in their home studios, and we have many large commercial studios running our three-room model that allows you to see up to 24 students per hour with just two teachers. So if you'd like to learn more about Piano Express, navigate to grouplessons.com and sign up for a free demo. You'll get to look at the method, our app and teacher guides, and we'll even give you a sneak peek of our implementation plan that has helped hundreds of studios start their group program in just a few weeks.
Yeah, one of the things you and I work on with the schools that we coach is this idea of a one sheet that we do at Brooklyn Music Factory. And it's just a format, right? But in the format, it says, okay, list 3 to 5 features of your private lesson or your group class, and then list 3 to 5 benefits. And people generally actually struggle with reframing in terms of benefits, which I get. It's like it's not an intuitive place to be, especially if you've been a student of music your whole life like we have, because we're fascinated by all the studying of the craft. And in fact, we're not even that focused anymore on outcomes at this stage of our career. We're just playing. We moved past the idea of needing a feature or an outcome. We're just into the discipline of studying the craft. And so naturally, when we try to describe what we do with our students, whether it's a private lesson or a group, we want to go right to what we know. We're like, well, here's what the lesson architecture is at Brooklyn Music Factory. Let me give you the minute-by-minute breakdown. Well, to your point, we've just totally lost 99% of all the parents when I give them the breakdown of the architecture of a lesson, right? So let me circle back to our original sort of what we teed up and the story, which is, okay, well, what can you accomplish then on an effective landing page? So let's say we get really clear, as you're describing, on all the features, sort of the outcomes that your child will experience, you know, in a mini keys group songwriting class at BMF. If we rewind tape and we go back to the search, which is what my SEO, expert was advising me on. He's like, Nate, the thing is parents aren't searching for the format you're selling, which I think is the point you're making when you say parents actually have no idea what format is going to be most effective. So my guy's like, dude, hold on. You can't actually get them to understand the features or even the opportunity in a Google search, because basically nobody's searching for group songwriting classes for ages 4. So would you agree with that?
One of the ways that I got 33% more students into my summer camps in the summer was that all during the spring, I would enroll people into just the lesson program because they weren't looking for summer camps. They were just looking for lessons. So I wouldn't confuse them. If they had looked for lessons and they contacted me, but we were close to the summer and here's this new beginner that would be perfect for one of my beginner camps, I did not try to confuse the sales process, which was highly refined for myself. Didn't try to confuse it. I would get them all the way through the trial lesson. They're already signing up for a lesson time slot. And then right at the end, I would say, oh, and by the way, I actually have one other thing I want to tell you about. Keep in mind, these parents are excited now. They've just seen their child learn like 6 songs in 20 minutes. The child's able to play on their own. I've made a whole production of it. Child's super excited. Everybody's smiling. This is the perfect time to sell them on something else. And I would tell them about the summer camp program. And I'd say, this is starting 4 weeks from now. And even though they'd be starting this month, they would still be a perfect fit for the beginner camp. I really think you should enroll them in that. I'm not kidding, Nate. 4 out of 5 times, they would do that too. But they weren't searching for summer camp. But I sold them into it because I knew that that would work. And I think that is the same principle that we're talking about here. So I 100% agree with that.
that let people have the experience that they want to have. And then once the trust is built, then you can take that trust and attention and greater connection and point that towards something else. The way that you could do it in the school, and the way you could do it in your school, is just even the sensitivity of the person that they're talking to on the front end. Have them ask questions about the goals when they feel heard, you know, whether it's Jessica or someone else at your school. I think it used to be Hillary also did this job. When they're having that first conversation with the family, ask them what they're looking for, ask them what their goals are, build rapport. And then after they're that deep into it, you could say, hey, you know what? I think that'd be a great fit, but let me tell you about a few other things that we do that might be even better, a better fit for your child, or might be more exciting, or might be more fun for them. Now that you've built rapport and trust and attention, you could probably point them towards those programs. So it's really, this is what I was referring to at the beginning of the episode. It's really about the strategic release of information and deciding at what point in the sales funnel you want to divert people to programs that are very tough to advertise to. That, because no one is searching that in Google search. No one's looking for that. No one understands it if they see it in Facebook newsfeed. But if you sell them on the outcome, if you sell them on the excitement, on the emotion of it, and then they want to reach out and connect with you, now you have the opportunity to push them into those programs, or at the very, yeah, I think you see the point I'm getting at there.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to share a couple things, Daniel, around this. Just to add on to what you said in terms of what the actual sales conversation can look and feel like. Before I do, let me share a couple of data points that I think might be interesting to our listeners. While you were talking, I was questioning my assumptions even around what Brooklyn Music Factory has done in terms of generating leads. And so when we put do our annual planning, we've got great episodes on annual planning, so go check those out. But one of the steps we talk about is compiling of your data from the previous year. And one of the pieces of data that we compile are the leads. What are people actually asking about at BMF? So let me go there for a second and just read you, our listeners. So looking back to 2023, in terms of the total lead count, we measure two different things, but let me just go with landing pages. For the total number of landing page leads that we got in the year for group classes, this could be adult bands, group piano, jam band, mini keys, was about 450. Okay, 450 leads in 2023 for group classes. The total number of leads for private lessons, which we do not focus a lot of attention on because we're already sort of surpassing our enrollment goals in that department, total number of leads on privates has been 300, right? So it's lower. But dig this, Daniel, this is what's mind-bending to us is, and we've talked, you know, we've done some great episodes on summer camps and camps in general. The total number of leads for camp has been nearly 1,100 in 23. So 1,100 leads. Now, here's how I want to, which is kind of fascinating, right? Actually, it's a piece of data that we're still working on in this quarter to better understand. And I've been measuring everything each month to just see if it's mirroring what happened last year. But why that data is important, because data is not important. A number doesn't matter. The story behind the number matters. Okay, we got to remember that, listeners. The story is what matters. We don't actually really care about the number in the cell unless it tells us a story that we're then interested enough to do something with, right? Otherwise, it's just another number, and there's way too many metrics in life.
Anyways. So true.
But and I know we talk about this, but what I want to say about this is what's fascinating to me, again, just about generating leads, then what are we doing with those leads? So we've gotten to the top of the marketing funnel. Now we're one step below where you were describing conversation with Jessica or Hillary. With the camp leads, which is nearly 1,100 last year, all of our camp programs are primarily the Mini Keys and Jam Band 101 group songwriting program. That's what we feature. So what's fascinating is in the context of a parent searching for a day camp or a summer camp, they are ready and willing to give us the information, even pay a deposit. They don't even get to talk to a salesperson. They have to pay a $198 deposit even just to have an opportunity, right, in the camp. So it's fascinating to me that in that context, so we have to sort of even reconsider our leads, which is to think, okay, when the parent is searching during the school year, maybe she's thinking or he's asking different questions when they're searching than when they're searching for summer camp, summer. And then when they're searching for summer, maybe your landing page can look and feel slightly different. It should absolutely do what you're talking about, Daniel, which is mirror the features first part, but maybe they're more motivated to buy in that context. Anyways, we certainly got 3x the leads for camp that we did for our group band. So I wanted to share that piece because I think it's interesting just even contemplate what that means from a lead gen standpoint, just from marketing. And
yeah, Nate, those numbers are fascinating. And in what you were saying there, I'm hearing kind of that even in this other program, in the summer camp leads, in the summer camp program, there was already a version of that focus on results versus focus on features thinking that going on there in the marketing of that. My question for you is, you know, in hearing me describe what I just did, especially that rant I kind of did earlier in the episode, is there any pushback you have against that thinking? Is there any concern you have over it? Because if there is, you might be representing folks in the audience or those who are listening or watching on YouTube. They might have objections in their head and you might stand in for them. So any objections there or do you feel like that you're on board with that? I don't know.
You know, I don't really have an objection, but what's interesting to me now in the history of Brooklyn Music Factory is that we have found the best results. Well, actually, I can't say the best because I couldn't pull up detailed data on it right now, year over year, over the last 7 years. But what I can say is we intuit that we're getting the best results when we add in a feature that you mentioned briefly, but it's I know it's a key component of what you do because we did an entire podcast episode on it, which was the trial lesson. So at BMF, we've done two versions of that. We've done what we call tours, where basically anyone can sign up for a tour anytime between 3 and 7 p.m. And the person, our community room teacher who's at the desk, will take the student around and give them a tour. But what we purposefully do in that tour is we try to describe the outcomes that a family can experience when they're in our space, which is an impactful space. And then we make sure that they go into and taste test the group classes. So they'll go into a mini keys if they're age appropriate, if they'll go into a jam band if they're age appropriate. So the tours are one thing that we've done that we found to be really effective in helping a parent sort of bridge that gap in knowledge, if I were to reframe how you put it. Like they don't quite understand the right format, but once their child comes out of a jam band 101 10-minute taste test and is totally psyched and says, you know, she wants to stay in the class, well, then the parent's like, well, hold on. This checks box number one, which is I just want my child to really love music lessons, unlike when I was a kid, which is very often what a parent says when they call us or when they come to Brooklyn Music Factory. They're like, we're looking for a fun first approach. Secondly, what I would say is, so the tours have been really effective and we're about to turn those on again. Again, we're going to turn them on now in April, May, June, and I'm actually going to try to create some version of a tour during summer camp where families can drop in the middle of our camp. But we're turning on them now, not to enroll right now, to enroll in the fall. So we're turning them on now to help them overcome any objections they might have to a group class and then put them either in a camp program or in the fall enrollment. So that's number one. Number two is we have a lot of success with open houses. So basically within an open house, which we've talked about in another app, in an open house, Daniel, we do the same thing you're talking about, which is instead of them talking one-on-one with Jessica over a phone call, which can be impactful and effective, it's much more effective if they come in, they write a speed song in the community room with me or somebody else, and then they go in and do a sample class. And then they go in and they play some sample big music games in another studio. And then they come out, they get a tattoo or a sticker, and they get a little one sheet on the benefits of the class. And then we say, are you ready to enroll? And so that open house is frankly probably the most impactful version we have. And it's kind of a way to like do batch sales, if you will. So I don't have any pushback. All I'd say is that we, in our experience, might do it differently than relying on the sales call. We might try to rely on directing towards a tour and or an open house. So that's my thought there.
I love that because you're widening the range of possibilities that people could imagine who might be listening to this. And the only thing I would say is I don't have any pushback on that. The only thing that I would add on to this to bring this full circle to what I said at the beginning is that you might not get the opportunity to have anything, a trial lesson, a phone call, an open house, if the top of the funnel turns people off and they won't even consider the school because of how the programs are presented. And again, that isn't over against anything you're saying, Nate. I'm simply saying that the best case that can be made for working with your school or Nate's school, anybody who's listening, the best case that can be made for someone taking lessons at your school is to actually take lessons at your school. And you've got to do things at the top of the funnel that will get them into an experience with you. And so that top of the funnel has to be focused on emotion, not logic. It needs to be focused on results, not programs. Not the particular features or details of those programs. It can't be overly informational. They don't care where you got your degree from. They don't care where your teachers got their degrees from, except in very rare instances. If it's a parent who they want their child to practice 8 hours a day and eventually become the next Lang Lang, then yeah, they might care about that. But for 99.9% of families out there who are looking for lessons, they don't care. And you putting that information on your website isn't just a neutral thing. It's a bad thing because it's taking space away from what you could have put on there. It's taking away from the things that you could have put on there that would have given them that taste of results in advance. That they will probably only look at your website for 30 to 45 seconds. Those 30 to 45 seconds had better be all about the results that they will get. It better be an emotional experience. And if your whole front page is just loaded with facts and details and way too much copy, and you wrote 1,000 words when you could have written 100, you lose. I know I can think of students right now who have less than 50 words on their front page, and the conversion rates on those sites crush. It is not information they're after. They're looking for a feeling.
Daniel, let me ask you, give us a concrete data point. When you say conversions that crush, give me an example of a landing page from a school that you maybe started with where you're like, these conversion rates are not going to work versus where they might get to. Like, what's a conversion rate range that you want our listeners to strive to attain?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a school I worked with in the middle of the pandemic in 2020. They come to my mind because the results were so dramatic. When I met them, their on-site conversion rates were between 0.5 and 1.5%. They started working with me on May 1st of 2020, and they went through the initial stages of my marketing training in about 8 to 12 weeks. And then right before the fall rush, this was huge, right before the fall rush, their on-site conversion rate jumped to 8.5%. And then during the fall rush, it went as high as like 12 or 13%, all documented. We were checking in every single week. So they literally more than quintupled. What comes after quintuple? What's like six times? Whatever six times is, it was like basically, something like that. It was 5 to 6 times what it had been earlier in that year and all through 2019, because they did a historical excavation of what their conversion rates had been in 2019. They had just been bad. And after kind of going through our optimizations, over quintupled the conversion rate on their site. That's a specific example.
So just to be, I love that. And you said, just so I'm clear for our listeners, and then I want to kind of bring this sucker home with a comment you made at the very beginning that I kind of want to frame in my language because it really hit home for me. But you're saying that a healthy conversion rate for our listeners is, can we say between, it should be a minimum of 5%?
100%.
And if you can get it up to 10%, you're doing great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good.
5% for me is the bare minimum that shows that your site is doing what it should do. Once you're more established and you're doing a lot more and you've optimized all parts of the funnel, it's not unusual to see conversion rates begin to approach double digit territory, though you usually have to have done quite a bit of optimizations. I will also mention that school that I was just talking about, between July of that year and November of that year, grew by 70 students after I helped them and optimized their entire funnel. So anyone who's listening, if that sounds good to you, just reach out to me.
You should 100%. I feel like everybody listening should go through your marketing course. I'm just calling it like it is, because I actually have no idea what the price point is, Daniel, but I'm sure the return on investment is there. And even if you're a veteran school owner, you're likely going to pick up two or three or four new ideas that you frankly hadn't implemented yet. Because I can speak from experience, 14 years into it, I literally in my weekly minder here, dude, but in my minder is like, I'm spending the entire week on a marketing upgrade. So my one focus for the week is just refining pages, upgrading some of those that page to, like you said, highlight more features. I'm sorry, highlight more outcomes, remove some of the features, swap out some photos that show outcomes that I want to show that are different, that might already be up there, that kind of thing. So anyways, I hope that's okay, Daniel. I'm giving a plug because I think it's an absolute no-brainer.
Yeah. And I would just say, for those who marketing or getting more students is very top of mind, I actually have a basic training about marketing that's free that goes into basically what I teach in the first 5% of the full marketing training I have. So anyone who's interested in that, there's no cost for this whatsoever. You can just go to growyourmusicstudio.com/free-training. It's just one word, no spaces, no dash, just growyourmusicstudio.com/free-training. And there's it's about a 40-minute training around how to build the architecture of a basic marketing system.
Totally awesome. Okay, so last point I'm going to make is just one of the things you said early on that I jotted down on my dry erase board here, normally reserved for whole notes, half notes, and quarter notes, now podcast notes, is that you said, you know, we need to focus on the majority of parents that are going to be searching, not the niche in necessarily, because at the very top of the funnel, we can't control what they're searching in their, you know, they go onto the Googleplex, they search. So when you get there, I just wrote down, you're looking for not the lowest common denominator, but you're looking for a strong common denominator that's going to work across the majority of parents in your demographic that is going to search for you. So that's how I framed it here, because I think that's super beneficial. I think oftentimes, I'm just going to say for myself, dude, that I'm so excited about what we do at Brooklyn Music Factory that I want to speak to all the intention we put into the deep curriculum, that I want to speak to that, which seems only natural. I've spent my whole career obsessed over games and curriculum and songwriting and composition. So naturally I want to speak to that, but I'm missing the long-term opportunity when I get caught in the weeds of that.
Yes. And this is so good, because it's so funny that it's our passion that makes us build these really amazing programs. And, you know, programs like what you guys have built at Brooklyn Music Factory, such as Big Music Games, which is a sponsor of this podcast, you should definitely go check that out. It's a fantastic program that helps kids, you know, get those basic skills in a fun way. So check out bigmusicgames.com/7FMS. You should definitely go check it out. You can start gaming for free. But you've built these truly amazing products, and you know them intimately, you know them very deeply. And so we want to share that. And that sharing actually could turn people off to it, because if they don't understand it, they won't accept it.
Right.
And so it goes back to this really old marketing adage. I think maybe Eugene Schwartz or maybe one of those old guys from like the middle of the 1900s said, customers don't care what you have to sell. They only care about what they want to buy. That's the adage. That's the heuristic. That's the principle. They don't care what we want to sell. They don't care what we have. They only care what they want to buy. The common denominator between all those customers is that they want their kids to love music. They want their kids to have a great experience with music. They want their kids to have longevity in music. Promise that. Sell them that. Prove that you can do that for them. And it doesn't matter what the program is.
Hey, it's Nate again. You know, every year at Brooklyn Music Factory, we get dozens and dozens of great reviews from our families. And you want to know how? Because we ask them. And they're happy to leave a review because of the positive impact that we've made on them. And so now I have a simple ask for you. If this podcast, the 7FMS podcast, was helpful to you, would you mind leaving a review for Daniel and I? And please share the podcast with another music school owner that you think might benefit. It's one of the best ways that you can support us. We appreciate it.